Oh, hello, caller.
Hello, caller here. First time caller.
No, I think that's wrong. It's like fourth time caller.
Long time listener.
Long time caller, first time listener.
Welcome to the Nerdy Legion podcast with Craig Gunderson and your host, Martin Ferretti.
No, the host is you, Nick. God damn it. How many times have we gone over this?
No.
Even Gundy knows it's your show.
I know.
He said it on Twitter.
No. I know who Joe it is.
No, that's just because I'm very responsive on Twitter.
You're also very responsible. That's why you have to be the host.
Ah.
If I was the host, God knows.
God knows.
There would be no banana hammock.
That's maybe. True. There might be.
No, there would be no banana hammock. I wouldn't wear one. I'd go banana commando.
Boy, I assume you boys have all seen the Christopher Nolan trailer for Tenet, right?
Yeah.
No.
What?
You have? What?
Get off this podcast. Get out of here.
Should we put this on hold?
No, sadly, we don't do that.
No, there's no hold here.
For a brief moment, I heard Christopher Lambert. And I was like, ooh.
Ooh, Highlander 5's finally coming out. Fantastic.
It's Lambert. He's French.
Shit.
Mm-hmm. Does he still have the luxurious hair? Now I want to see a Google image of him.
So, I don't know if he does, but I... What's it called? Is it called The Key? The Key. Let me see here. I'm pretty sure that's it. I was listening to a podcast, and they had this director on for this movie.
Uh-huh.
And I looked it up. The Broken Key. That's what it is.
Oh.
And... it sounded interesting because they were talking about like Gnostic Christianity. And so apparently it's like based on that. And, he has, Rucker Hauer's in it. Christopher Lambert is in it. And so I haven't seen it yet. The trailer looks terrible.
Wow.
Like it looks bad.
2.2 on IMDb.
Yeah, it looks really bad. But I'm going to watch it anyway. I think I got to buy it. I think that's why I didn't watch it yet. Let me see here.
That's the hurdle if you have to spend money on it.
probably not.
Yeah. He's not going to have the long luxurious hair. He's 60 plus, but I do see in his IMDb credits that he was on an episode of The Blacklist. What? Question mark? What?
Was he?
Are you asking me, hey, Nick, you've seen every episode of The Blacklist. Of course you... No! Why would I be watching The Blacklist?
People watch The Blacklist. Which one's that? Is that the one with Bill Hader? No. What's his name?
That's the one with the sex, lies, and videotape guy.
I don't know what that is.
Spader. James Spader.
Yeah.
Spader. Yes, that's it.
Who does not have long, luxurious hair?
No, he does not.
No.
The Blacklist.
But yeah, it is popular.
Yes.
Not the Black Fish.
The What Did You Watch guys love that show.
Oh, I didn't even know it was still on.
Really?
Yes.
I think it didn't wrap?
It's the last season.
Series premiere, finale.
Maybe. Oh, is it like done?
I thought so.
Am I recording? Okay, yes, good.
Are we on a podcast? What's going on here?
Shh, don't tell anybody. Anyways, The Broken Key, yes. He's cut his hair, Christopher Lambert.
Ah, good.
Yes.
That doesn't seem to be streaming on any services. Like, it's not showing up at all.
No, it's not streaming.
Sounds like a winner.
But it was on somewhere. I'm pretty sure I had to buy it. What's that thing? Can I stream it? Is that still a thing?
I don't know. You sent that to me, and it was fantastic. Even though I think it was built on Flash, which is problematic, to say the least. And then I think probably the operating system was updated, and all of a sudden it just broke every time I tried to use it on said laptop.
Yeah, it's been garbage for a little while.
Yeah.
I've been using this app called Just Watch.
Oh.
Oh, hello.
And you can tell it what services you subscribe to, and if you're searching for something to find out what service streams it, it'll let you know.
Justwatch.com, I like it.
now with this app, can you also type in something that you want to be notified once it does stream?
I was hoping that there's something called your watch list. I don't think it gives you notifications.
Darn it. Mm. We should invent that app.
You can kind of save it.
This is good,
I still
man.
Like it.
This is better than can I stream it?
Yeah, I like this.
Well, for one, it works, but the interface is nice.
That is a great tip because I hate to say it, I go to IMDb and then I look to see, oh, is there anything that streams this for free? Nope, $5.99, $9.99.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a crummy way to do it.
Man, the popular movies are terrible. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's some alright stuff on here.
Oh, but also, like, if you tell it what services you have subscriptions with, then there's like a stream of like what just got added.
Ooh,
oh, that's sweet.
Yeah,
but
obviously you need to have a sign in for that.
That's oh, sorry, Martin.
A sign in? Is this company trustworthy? Do they respect my privacy?
Oh, maybe you don't. I don't know. I don't think maybe you don't. I mean, on the app on my phone.
No advertisement, your watch list and all. Okay, let's find out. Sign in with Facebook. Oh, no.
Well, don't worry. Your Disney Plus account credentials have already been leaked all over the place, so you might as well use those.
But what's great about it is, like, all, like, it's a stream of everything, so it's like, even, like, all the garbage is in there, too. Like, for example, yesterday, Little Miss Doolittle, these animals speak.
Oh. Wow. That the reminds me, did you have the Dr. Doolittle trailer in Jumanji, Nick?
Okay. Jumanji's a... All right. Sideline. Sidebar, people.
No, it's all related.
Okay. Sitting in Jumanji, preparing 15 minutes till Jumanji's ready to go. I send out a tweet thanking Martin for the suggestion. I'm sitting there, happy as a lark. They show the commercials, you know, before the trailers. And one of them comes up, The Expanse. Amazon Prime's very own Expanse.
Oh, I didn't have
that. And I watch that on the big screen, and I'm nudging Julie, the cruise director. I'm like, look at this. This looks good. And she's on the phone listening to something. And then she looks over at me, and she goes, my mom must have just butt-dialed or redialed me. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what's Philomena up to? And she's like, no, it sounds like she fell. And she's been, like, sick for the last, like, two, 3 days.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
And then she's like, listen to this. And I'm like, I ain't going to listen to this. I'm like, even if I said she didn't fall, are you going to take my word for it? Or are we walking out of this theater? Well, you don't have to be so mean. And I was, in my head, I was just like, it doesn't matter what I think happened on the phone. We're leaving right now. And, of course, since her mom butt dialed, that phone's off the hook. We can't call her back. She frantically tried to call her back 3-4 times. So to answer your question, we left 3 minutes before the trailers started.
Oh, man.
Yes. And since we left, guess what AMC said when I suggested maybe we can get our money back? Oh, no. No. Goodbye. There's the door.
That's exciting. You should have told them when you were leaving.
I did.
Oh.
And they were like, sorry.
That's messed up.
More importantly, your mother-in-law's okay?
The mother-in-law butt-dialed, and the commotion that the wife heard, which then while we're driving over there, she plays it on her speaker, of course. And hey, I'm doing this completely like, trust me, this is all like panicky at the time. And I'm making light of it now. I certainly was not making light of it then.
Oh, no, I'm waiting for the opportunity to make light of it, so...
No.
Let me know when she's okay.
Yeah, that will come. But also, like, we couldn't get a hold of her via phone. So it was a little panicky, scary. But she also didn't know the phone was off the hook. Well, her house, there's no entrance into her house, which luckily we cleared that up because we never had keys. We don't have keys. But that's been cleared up since whenever we did that Sunday. So I have keys now to her house to let myself in.
Wait, you need to explain how there's no entrance to her house.
Well, her
because garage, that could be garage, why there was an emergency. I can't get out of the house.
No, her garage door keypad that is, I guess, broken. I'm not sure. So the only way she lets herself in is her garage door opener. So she lets herself in that way. Well, she has a front door and a back door, and both of those require keys. We don't have keys, like I said. So now we do have keys. I've rectified this situation. So since we couldn't let ourselves in, we went around the back to try to, like, there's windows there. We can look in. She's always in either the kitchen or the living room, which is towards the back of the house. So we went around, and there was Philomena doing the Sunday crossword puzzle. So I was just like, okay. And she had no clue. And needless to say, driving over there, like I said, my wife had this voicemail message on speaker. And I'm listening to it, and, like, of course, and I understand, like, your mind goes to the 10th degree, like, panic. What could have happened? Did somebody break in? Like, your imagination takes it places. And I'm listening to it, trying to, like, decipher and, like, Sherlock Holmes it out. And I'm like, okay, it sounds like plates. It sounds like she's trying to lift up something, and it's awkward and whatnot. But you can hear her, like, it's either she's coughing or she's, like, grunting. So could she be laying on the kitchen floor having a heart attack? Yeah, she could. But what it turned out was she was reaching, like, in the lower cupboards by, like, her stove, and she was trying to pull out really, really heavy pots and pans to get to this container. So that's what we heard. But of course, I mean, hey, when she's, like, groaning and, like, she's coughing a lot, granted she has a cold, of course all this stuff can logically be wiped away. But when you listen to it, it's like, well, it could also be taken that she's laying on her kitchen floor having a heart attack. Thank God, knock on wood, that was not the case. And everything was all right. But I even told Julie, the cruise director, when we were walking up, I'm like, look, you're really amped up. You're really scared. Don't, if you see that your mom's A-OK, don't burst into her kitchen. And since you're so revved up, don't start, like, yelling at her and, like, displacing all of this anxiety onto her when she's the innocent party. She was sitting there doing the Sunday crossword puzzle, and that's exactly what happened. So the whole time I was just like, Liz, calm down. Liz, don't yell at your mom. Your mom did nothing wrong. Everything's okay. But of course when we got back to the car, she's like, I understand she's okay, but this cycle of, like, weird, the situation was so weird. She's like, I just put myself in the position of what it, you know, her mom's, like, in her mid 80s. It's like, in her head, she's like, I just kept putting myself in the situation of, oh my God, what am I going to do when I am in this position of she's not picking up her phone, and now we have to go over there and fingers crossed she's okay. Cause it's happened two or three times. Especially when her son was alive and she would leave at all hours of the day and night to go check up on him. Cause he had a few problems, the last few years of his life. So all of a sudden we would be frantically trying to call her umpteen times, and she's great at answering the phone. And when we're not getting that result, then all of a sudden I'm driving over there trying to figure out where the hell she is. Cause it's hard not to be thinking, oh my God, you know, could she have had a stroke? Is she just laying on her bathroom floor? We don't know. You always hear about that. So luckily, knock on wood, she was just doing her crossword puzzle, but it was still like, oh my God, it was not a fun way to start off Sunday. Let's put it that way.
When and you missed Jumanji.
Yeah.
I did miss Jumanji. Yes. Sorry. No rock and heart connection that day.
When you got there, was she like, oh, thank goodness. I need a 6-letter word. Starts with L. Highlander's Christopher.
No, it's usually the, what symbol is used on a Twitter reply? I don't know any of this stuff. Why would they even ask this stuff? Oh, my God. But then she's like, ah, yes, the first name of the lead in My Fair Lady, the musical. Yes, I know that. Let me write that one down.
You didn't have to come over. I tried to call you.
It's Christopher Lambert. Lambert!
That's amazing. That's but amazing.
The wife is, after watching a little bit of that Expanse, she's like, oh, we should watch that. And I'm like, hell yeah. But then getting back to Tenet, today I was like, we should watch that Expanse. And I'm like, did you watch the Christopher Nolan trailer? So then I played it for her. And you saw the trailer, Martino. As soon as the one guy appears by the lead's face and puts something in his mouth and it looks like he's having an epileptic fit, that was the part, and that's like 20 seconds into a 2-minute trailer. That was the part that she was completely checked out and like, nope, looks too violent for me. I'm out. And I'm like, oh, man. Like, but he's playing with time. He's doing stuff. Come on, it's Christopher Nolan. And she's like, nope, you enjoy that.
I love Christopher Nolan.
Same here.
I love Christopher
Nolan. What a simple concept, just moving time forward and backwards. Subtly, he's good.
He's really good. It's like the stuff that he was doing in Inception, mm-hmm. but like the next level up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that, man. It's gonna be so good.
It's good.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to ask you two young lads. I was flipping through Hulu. They have a Christmas section or a holiday section. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And one of the movies was a holiday movie remake that was shown on FX, which, of course, everyone who listens to the show should know that is my favorite. When I had cable, that was my favorite cable channel.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, yeah, for sure. They were knocking it out of the park there for like 7 years. But this one, it's a remake, stars Guy Pearce.
Mm-hmm.
And it's A Christmas Carol.
So I do have cable.
Oh, yeah.
And we're about halfway through it. And the reason we're halfway through it is when you pull it up, it looks like it's episodes, even though it's like a movie. It's mm-hmm. like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And something weird happened where we caught up with it, that it was playing live, and we took the dog out for a walk or something. We thought we could just pause it and replay it. And we couldn't like pick back up where we were.
Oh.
So we set it up to record tonight so that we can finish it. But it is really good.
Okay. I have a few questions. First off, where did you end it?
Well, I mean, I could point. I don't even know if I'm fairly certain that there. I could throw a plot point out there to you. Are you saying you saw it, or are you comparing it to the Dickens novel?
No, I'm comparing it to the 5,000 Christmas Carol films that have come out, as well.
That's
as
the just it. I can't. They took so many liberties with it. If I told you, I left it off with Cratchit's wife in a compromising position.
What? This is a porno?
No, but it's very adult.
Charles Dickens makes a porn.
So they're doing this amazing thing with him where
ghost,
it's almost like
which ghost showed up? How about that?
Oh, I don't even think we got to the second ghost.
Okay, all right.
But the other thing is, he doesn't introduce himself as like Christmas past, Christmas future. He shapeshifts as the first ghost. He kind of like shapeshifts into different characters from his past and stuff.
Oh, now is it too much for Julie the cruise director?
I don't know. I'm not the right person to ask. I don't feel like there's like a lot of like, you know, lights bouncing around and something scuffling in the corner, that kind of stuff. There's none of that.
Okay.
And it's not like gross or, you know, bloody or anything like that. It's just very adult themed.
All right. Okay, because sometimes FX, all of a sudden, it's like, what are they? Are they doing the S&M version of the source material? What the hell's going on here?
Like, they take such liberties that they're like the wife was like, are they like really early on? Like, are they trying to paint Scrooge as like on the spectrum? Like, he's recording like footsteps and wagon wheel turns outside of his office. And it turns out that he wants to like complain to the mayor or something like that about too much wagon wheel action outside of his door.
Sheesh.
Wait, is this a period film?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, really, really went in some different directions with this.
I saw the preview really image and like he's wearing a stovetop like hat. So yeah, it's period.
And you know that it's when you think Scrooge, you think like crotchety old man and stuff. And you know, yeah, Guy Pearce is you know it's not his memento years, but you know he's not exactly an old man.
Right. Okay. I might have to check that out tomorrow.
It's very good.
I like that.
All right, I'll put it on my list here.
Yeah, welcome back to Hulu, Martin.
Is it just A Christmas Carol? That's just the name of it.
Yep, yeah, they didn't even throw like a Charles Dickens Christmas Carol or anything in front of it.
FX's A Christmas Carol.
There you go. At least they put in that.
And it's in association with the BBC, so there's a lot of really good British actors in it and stuff.
Oh, wait. I'll definitely watch it now.
Nice.
Yeah, that's so weird. So it says season 1, episode 1, but it's 172 minutes long.
Yeah. That makes sense.
That's really weird. As long as they don't make FX's A Dirty Porn Stash Die Hard. Die Hard with a Die Hard. Then I'm good.
Oh, man. Did either of you, this is my other TV question, and it's on Hulu. That's how I watched it. Not the week before when it was on ABC. But did either of you watch this year's installment of Live in Front of a Studio Audience?
Nope. I don't even know what that is.
Jimmy Kimmel's done it one other time, but both times, and it totally makes sense. Jimmy Kimmel, it's like produced by Jimmy Kimmel and Norman Lear. So both of them are there. Norman Lear's like 96 years old, which is freaking crazy because he's still like uber like quick and smart, but it's a night that's done live and hence the title Live in Front of a Studio Audience, and they take Norman Lear's this time they did two of his series, All in the Family, and then he did the Jeffersons. And
I saw the commercials for it. I had no idea that's what you were talking about.
Yeah. And it's set just like it was done in 75, and they don't edit out anything. They bleeped out when they said words that are inappropriate for today's audience, but they actually said the words. And all the uncomfortable, like nothing was rewritten. It was done exactly how it was in 75 and 77. But they would have, like, Mr. Jefferson was Jamie Foxx. And on All in the Family, Woody Harrelson was Archie. Marissa Tomei was Gene Staplehorn. Ike Barinholtz was Meathead. Like, they had, and, God, I forget his name, not Bentley on the Jeffersons, but the mixed couple, Will Ferrell was the husband.
Mm.
But it was fascinating to watch it again. And even at the first commercial break, Julia Cruz director was like, wow, this is so un-PC. And I'm like, yeah, that's the whole point of them doing it. And guess what? That was the whole point in 75 when Norman Lear was writing it, because the people that were not PC, whether they, like Archie Bunker was a bigot, but he didn't know he was a bigot. So I'm like, that's the whole point. I'm like, he's not redeeming. And it's everyone else that's around him in his universe that's correcting him. But, like, guess what? The only way you know that something's a problem is if somebody shines the light on it and then you try to fix the problem. If they don't know that there's a problem and no one shines the light on it, you know, how's things going to change? And we watched it, and she, at the end, she was like, wow, that was really funny. That was shockingly funny. And it was interesting because even like Jamie Foxx, he even stumbled on one of the lines and even said, oh, this is live TV. But it was really cool to actually see what they were pulling off in 75, 77. I guess the first installment had good times and I missed it. And I went into my dumb Hulu thinking, oh, they might have season one. No, they didn't have season one of it.
That's so weird. When we get to our topic, you just, I think you're going to enjoy my picks.
Oh.
Because this show seems to encompass both of those things.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Will you call me Meathead?
I mean, I can if you want.
Yeah.
Speaking of stumbling in front of a live audience, please tell me you guys caught Eddie Murphy on SNL.
I haven't watched SNL in a year or two.
There has been no reason up until now to watch SNL for like 5 years.
But still, Martin Freddy, shame on you.
Why?
Eddie Murphy.
I didn't even know he was on there.
Oh, God. You know, sometimes you have to plug in. I know you don't want to plug in. You want to be off the radar. But sometimes you need the... I'll be your radar. Listen, 2020, I'm your radar.
Look, I've boycotted QT and Walmart.
No.
Yes.
Wait, your daughter now can go in and shoplift anything at Walmart. You taught her well. And now you're boycotting Walmart? That doesn't make sense.
Well, Walmart is using facial recognition cameras now, and they don't need to recognize my face.
So are you going to be wearing those glasses, like those glasses that like will distort your eyes?
You just make a suit out of those license plate covers.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. No, actually, all you need is a little LED strip on a cap, that's and you're right. Good to go.
Well, to answer your question, Gundy, yes, I did watch Saturday Night Live, and oh, holy guacamole, was that good.
Did you hear, well, first of all, like, the ratings on it were just, like, outrageous. Like, they haven't seen ratings, like audience tuning in a really, really long time. So, like, people, unlike Martin, really responded to the fact that he was gonna be on. And then I don't know if you heard, but there was some news about the, it wasn't directly from Bill Cosby, I don't think, but the Cosby, like, I don't know, the Cosby Trust, well, I don't know what the organization is, Cosby's people, mm-hmm. basically slammed Eddie Murphy for taking shots at him and stuff.
Hey, Cosby took shots at Eddie Murphy when he first started Saturday Night Live over and over and over again.
Just crazy. Just craziness.
He used to hate on, oh God, what's the dude that I like? Chappelle.
Yes. Every dirty black comedian he would go after.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Well,
crazy.
Everyone hated actually, Chappelle because like Oprah was all over Chappelle too.
Chappelle was on.
He was.
Chappelle was on? I gotta watch it now.
I mean, if you like watching Dave Chappelle smoke a cigarette on live television, then
perfect. That's all I need.
You should tune in.
That's all I need.
It was all very, didn't it feel very premeditated? Everything he did, even the characters that really flopped, Velvet Jones flopped.
But, I disagree.
But it felt like he was doing it almost to say this character, sort of like All in the Family, this character was really good in the mid-80s, mm-hmm. but it is definitely a character like out of time right now. Like, it wouldn't work today.
I feel like Gumby on the Weekend Update
was
ridiculously gratuitous, but I didn't care.
Oh no.
It just needed to happen. I just need to hear him say those words again. You know,
if you only watch one, and you can go to YouTube, and I know you don't do YouTube, Martin, but you could go to whatever video service you want to use, and on that service you will be able to see, even if you just watch the Gumby Weekend Update portion, even that was the portion for me that I thought, wow, Eddie Murphy's finally comfortable. It took him 40 minutes to get comfortable in front, to get back to feeling his oats being on live TV. but you could tell he was sort of off the cue cards. He was harassing the two guys. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it, the two Weekend Update guys, those are the only two, for me, that's the only segment worth watching every week are those two. Everything else has been terrible.
With Mr. Scarlett Johansson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Alan Jost.
Yes.
Oh, now I hate him.
You didn't know they were married?
No.
Yeah, they got married recently, I think, like last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah. We totally tuned out too, but that one guy who's married to Kate Beckinsale. Yeah. Did you watch that segment, Nick?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We were totally just, well, because we had recorded it, so we fast forwarded through it because Gina hates that guy. But yeah. I didn't know that he was married to Kate Beckinsale either.
I didn't know he married her.
The director, or is it a new guy?
No, it's that young cocky guy. They only drag out for certain roles. That's all of them. Sorry,
Pete Davidson.
Yeah,
I think that's him. Yeah,
that is.
He's dating Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he married her, but I know he was dating her.
They're together. But
what?
I found out afterwards, and straighten me out on this, Nick. But like that whole segment was him basically saying that he was going for rehab or something, right?
Yeah, he's all over the place. He's aye aye aye.
Wait, what's going on right now? Are you being serious? Or are you fucking with me?
Yeah,
Pete Davidson.
He chose the SNL episode featuring Eddie Murphy to announce that he was going into rehab.
Wow.
And hey, that could have been a gimmick. It didn't seem like that was a gimmick. But dude, he's dated a lot of famous women.
Yeah, he was engaged to Selena Gomez. Not Selena Gomez. The other girl. Whoever that is. The singer girl.
Yes. Yes.
Her. Yes, yes, yes. Ariana Grande. That's the one.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think they broke up because he wasn't going to rehab.
Yeah, if you want to see him with Kate Beckinsale, check out an image search of just those two at a hockey game. Holy Christ, he's inhaling her head. It's right. Like, oh my God, it is insane, but pretty awesome.
Dude, what is happening? He must have like the most gigantic penis in the world.
Yeah, maybe.
Can I say penis on this podcast? Just making sure.
You can be the first.
Explicit.
Oh my God, Pete Davidson and Kate Beckinsale make out after Motley Crue. What is happening?
This is, okay, 2020, I'm going to be your radar, Martin. I'll just send it over to you and, you know, you do with it whatever you want to do with. But I will say Eddie Murphy going back onto Saturday Night Live was freaking amazing. And I can't wait for him to go out on tour. I can't wait for him to film his Netflix special. Give me the more Eddie Murphy, the better. Bring it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Breaking news. Now I'm all into this. He's no longer dating Kate Beckinsale.
He's dating
Kaia Gerber, who is Cindy Crawford's daughter.
Oh.
And he dated...
I didn't know that.
And he dated Allie McDowell? Andy McDowell? Her daughter.
What?
Yeah.
Allie McDowell's daughter?
No. Andy McDowell.
You mean her daughter wasn't just a visual metaphor?
So that brings it all the way back around to Sex Lies videotape. Hello, professional.
Wow. That is crazy. Oh, she was the girl in The Leftovers. That show's great.
That show is great.
But boy, it was when Eddie Murphy was doing the old characters or even his new characters, like the elf sketch. Did you see that, Gundy?
They were talking about it on a piece, and I don't remember the elf sketch.
It was the last sketch of the night, which that's usually the like garbage sketch. But he went back, and it was almost like he went back to his first album, where there's like a bit in his first album that he's always talking about. There's always somebody in the neighborhood that, you know, they didn't see that accident or whatever happened on the street. But if there's a camera crew out, oh, he's got to tell you everything about what just happened. And he did that. He did that as an elf at the North Pole. And it was a newscast from the North Pole because there was electrical fences around the North Pole but Santa didn't pay his bill, and an abominable snowman or polar bear came into the elf's compound and was, I guess, like taking elves away, like, you know, sheer chaos. And he played it so freaking, oh my God, it was hilarious.
I totally missed this. And I remember the end part where everybody who was on the show comes out and takes a bow in their civilian clothing, but, and Dave, and I was like, God damn it, Dave Chappelle's still smoking. But, but I don't remember this sketch.
Yeah, you can find it on the YouTubes. It's all right. Pretty funny. Pretty, pretty funny.
All right. I got to look this up now. Put it on my queue.
Yeah, it's good. It's, hey, he does Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, which I was shocked that Tom Hanks didn't dress up as Fred Rogers, and he was the guy who knocked on the door and, like, came into... I was so like, how could they have blown that? How could they have blown that? But still, but he takes an old sketch like that, and then he completely turns it into gentrification of a neighborhood. So the entire sketch is about that. And it was so freaking fresh and up to date, and it was just amazing. Amazing. I don't know how much Eddie Murphy wrote, but obviously the writers of that show knew that this weekend was going to hit. So we got to bring our A material.
If I remember correctly, Colin Jost is the head writer.
Yeah, and so is Michael.
Michael Che, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But still, they have a gaggle of writers around them. But they obviously, oh my God, watch any other, because I think this is the winter break episode. Watch any other episode from this season. Mamma mia. Ooh, you can't even go onto YouTube and be like, give me the best sketch from this season. And even that will be like, ay, ay, ay.
Oh, it's so painful.
Yeah. Ugh. It's not good.
Surely they can get better comedians.
Maybe. Yeah, as long as they don't get racist comedians on YouTube. Oofa.
Even when they hook into something good, like a good funny concept and stuff, they overdo it, and then you're just kind of like, okay, I see where this. You're just going to keep doing that, and yeah, that was funny for a bit.
Yep. Or they do the classic Saturday Night Live or any sketch comedy where it's a great kernel of an idea, but then they have no clue how to end that idea. So 9 times out of 10, it's just a camera swinging back and they show the audience clapping and then they go to a commercial. Like, oh boy, that was bad. But Michael Che's one freaking funny mother effer. So I will watch him talk about the news anytime.
His stand-up's pretty good.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was good in Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Is that right?
I don't watch that.
You should. It's good.
I like should. Comedians. So I've it's heard.
Good. I've raved about it many times.
Mm-hmm.
But no, those were good. Those were a few things that hit this week.
So we started Don't Fuck With the Cats.
Oh!
So I only got through the first episode. Well, we were recording it, texted my wife, and she's like, what are you talking about? And I said, and so I explained it over text, and she immediately knew who the guy was. So she's farther ahead. I think she's almost done with it. Apparently that guy is not her favorite.
Yeah, because she's sane.
I don't know about that. My wife has a Jeffrey Dahmer pop socket on her phone.
Oh my God.
What?
Oh yeah, she had a custom made Jeffrey Dahmer pop socket.
She paid extra to have Dahmer right next to her middle finger for everybody who sees her walking down the street with her phone to enjoy.
Dude, my wife is really into true crime, I told you.
I subscribed now to the True Crime Obsessed.
Yes. Aren't they funny?
I haven't listened to any yet, but you guys are talking about it. And I'm like, oh, I got to, because same thing in this household. And I know, Nick, you were talking about the 2020s and the Datelines. And we still haven't watched the, was it Confessional Murderer? Confessional Killer?
Confession of a Murder?
Confession Tapes?
No, you were just talking about it. Is that what it's called? Confession Tape?
No. Isn't it Confession of a Murder or something like that?
Something like that.
Confession Killer, that's it. Confession
Killer. The guy who may or may not have actually killed all those people.
Yeah, yeah. Confession Killer.
Confession Killer.
Henry Lee Lucas.
But my wife keeps updating me on whether she is willing to watch the Don't Fuck with the Cat show.
Now I'm dying just to hear Martin the first 8 minutes of that show. Isn't it? If you can get through that,
yes,
you'll be okay.
Yes.
Yeah. The first 8 minutes is terrifying. You want to look away. You don't want to look away, yet you want to turn this off.
Oh, I made popcorn.
Oh, yeah. Get out of the room and make popcorn. That's what I would think of. Jesus Christ.
That stuff doesn't bother me. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Putting cats in bags and sucking the air out. Yep.
Man. It wasn't bloody enough.
Oh, God. I'm just so happy they didn't show anything. but tell your wife, Gundy, that, yes, she should watch that. It is a freaking action film. It is. Wow. It's a chase. It goes places.
The Cat Show?
Yeah.
The Cat Show. Not Jeffrey Lloyd Webber's Cats.
No.
Every time I hear the title, I think it's gonna be like a sequel to Adam Sandler's Don't Mess with the Zohan.
If only.
So no, maybe it's like Don't Fuck with Adam Sandler's Cat.
No, that's Uncut Gems.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Which that looks really good, Nick. I watched the trailer.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it looks fantastic.
Like Sandler's actually acting again.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah, yeah. I know the wife, she's not going to go see that with me. And to convince Tom to go see it, I'd have to be like, there's 50,000 guns in it. And there's a big, huge car chase. No. Yeah. He won't go see that.
Mm. Yeah, it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
I dug it. What else am I missing?
I don't know. I'm just happy you're watching that Cats documentary.
Man, there was something else I wanted to follow up on.
And not the James Corden T. Swizzle Cats. Air Breeze.
You know, they pulled a Sonic. They're redoing some of the CGI in that movie.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, apparently they're like patching it like in real time.
Hey, notes to producers, your movie's already out. Don't. Why are you spending more money on this thing? My God.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing Cats. I saw it in Broadway when I was like, fuck, I was little, man. I had to be like 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
I did not enjoy it.
Was it a school trip?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I get that.
Yep.
I was going to say, there's no way Nelson's taking you to Cats.
No. My mom was a little bit into that stuff, but no, not Nelson.
Yeah, my mom, same for me. My mom for sure would have taken me, but it was more being dragged by a school project.
Yeah. Dude, we had some good trips, man. I took German for 5 years, and we'd go to the opera every year.
Nice.
And that was awesome.
Yeah,
see, we had I did the same as well, except they took us to Expressionist.
What?
It's true. Yeah. Like Nick, I'm sure you've been to Facets Multimedia.
Yes,
it's kind of like this art film theater, just tiny little place.
Very pretentious.
And they do, like, you could rent movies and stuff from there too, but yeah, like we would go see a German movie there.
Did you watch Das Boot?
Yes, we watched Das Boot.
I remember that scene when he like tries to cut his ding dong off. Oh man. That was rough.
That's streaming on Hulu. I just saw it.
Is it Das Boot?
Mm-hmm.
I might have to rewatch that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in like 25 years.
No, when you go to Facets, at least when I was going to Facets, it's like, oh, it's an Ingmar Bergman film festival or a Klaus Kinski film festival. It was the most extreme craziness you've ever. It isn't even like, oh, it's a Jean Cocteau, Beauty and the Beast, or Orpheus, you know, something really pretty and beautiful. Oh, no. It was like the most extreme, dark-ass, like, German cinema. Yeah, or like, Swedish cinema. It's like
oh. I went there for a 9/11 documentary.
There you go. There you go.
But for as long as I lived, like, four blocks away from that place, I never set foot in it. Mm.
Yeah, even when DVDs came out, I don't know about Blu-rays, but when DVDs were a huge thing, Facets would have all of these art house flicks on VHS. They just never updated. It was just like, yeah, you want this, you know, Klaus Kinski, you know, film from Germany from 1973? This is the only way you can get it. It's on VHS. Like, oh my God.
Wow. Is this like where Lars von Trier premieres all his films?
There you go.
Yeah. My wife would love that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, von Trier.
Does she have him on the back of her phone as well?
No, no. But you know, Antichrist is one of her favorite movies ever.
He's a good director.
Like, she loves his movies. Whatever that trilogy's called, she loves it. But, I'm like, no thanks. I'll skip that.
But I will give Facets credit. There's a couple other theaters in Chicago that are similar. They know their lane, they know their audience, and they stay in it. It's not like, we're going to put on White Christmas. No. White Christmas ain't coming anywhere close to Facets. Like, they know exactly what they're going to be putting out. We'll do an Ingmar Bergman movie right around Christmas time. What's it about? Death and suicide. Perfect.
Perfect.
Well, I mean, you still haven't seen FX's Christmas Carol.
Very true. Is it very Ingmar Bergman? That's what I'm worried about.
I'm not sure it's going to bring you into the holiday spirit.
No?
I mean, you know, the payoff is at the end, and I haven't gotten there yet, but I mean, the opening scene is a kid urinating on Worley's grave, and you actually see in the grave as the urine trickles down onto his face.
Oh, wow. Jeez, yeah, that's the opening scene?
Yes.
Holy moly.
I think Julie, the cruise director, will be punching the ticket to end that one. Holy Christ. If they don't have that son of a bitch, if they don't have Father Christmas, a future, whatever it is, Father Christmas, whatever the hell it is, the big jolly guy that has the horn of plenty, the last ghost.
Christmas future?
There you go. If they don't have him, big old jolly guy, I'm going to be so bummed. You can make it as dark as you want, but I got to have like the uplifting future. Come on. Well, not the uplifting future, just the uplifting future ghost.
I don't know. From the sounds of this so far, it might be like Gluttony in that movie Seven.
Oh, no, I highly recommend it. It's just a different take.
There's no golden shower in Basil, the 1939 version, I'm pretty sure. And I'm pretty sure George C. Scott was not taking a steaming dump on somebody's chest either. So in the 1976 version.
I mean, Victoria era London, you had very limited ways to express your protest. You couldn't put like a Calvin sticker on the back of your wagon urinating on the Ford logo.
That's true. That's very true.
Or the Scrooge and Worley logo.
Maybe I should just stick with my Black Adder Christmas special. Maybe that would be a better way to go.
There you go.
Or watch Die Hard like a normal person.
It's true. I need to find out if that's streaming.
Let's pull up. Let's watch.
I would like to watch that. And I don't want to try to figure out where the hell my DVDs is. Mm.
See, I don't need to worry about it because I own all those films.
Streaming on this is funny. Streaming on DirecTV and something called Fubo.
Fubo?
Fubo?
That sounds like the Pirate Bay.
Is that Sean Diddy Combs streaming service? Did he and Jay-Z put that out right after Jay-Z's music thing flopped?
But you can buy it for $8.
What?
What a steal.
For the Blu-ray?
No.
Oh, it's on Crackle.
Why isn't mine telling me that?
Really? It tells me? It's right there on the top.
I don't know why it's telling me about DirecTV. I don't know that.
DirecTV, Sony Crackle, and Fubo.
Oh, God.
Now I've got to see what this Fubo is. It's not even Fubo.com. That's dangerous.
Those are the shoes.
Fubo.tv.
Are you trying to pronounce Fubu?
Oh, this is like, oh God, what's that thing? It's not really a streaming service. It's like internet cable. Yeah. Yep. That's what it is. Like, whatever that Hulu one, the Hulu TV one, and then, like YouTube TV or whatever, where you pay $30 a month and you get 100 channels. That's what Fubo is. Not a sponsor. Fucked Fubo.
Yet.
Well, definitely not now, because I just dropped Fubo the F-bomb on him. I just put my Calvin pissing sticker on Fubo. That could be a good episode title, but iTunes would ban us.
Oh.
But yes, I am doing that on Christmas Day. It's my Christmas Day marathon of Die Hard films.
I put on, much in the same vein of Christmas action films, I put on Long Kiss Goodnight while I was wrapping presents today.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yes.
You're not going to be putting on some Twilight Zone episodes?
I don't subscribe to Fubo. That's true. What am I, made of Fubo dollars?
Yes.
How much is it?
Fortune cookies.
It can't be that bad. $54.99? I'll just get cable for that.
For a year?
No, a month.
A month?
Yeah.
My God. What does it include? The Playboy channel? What the hell?
Well, it's 194 channels in my area.
194?
Yeah.
That's a lot? So 60% of those are religious and cable access channels?
I don't know, dude. These look legit. All the local channels. Yeah. Oh, it looks like all the sports channels. Is ESPN on here? I don't see ESPN, but it's got all the FS channels. TBS, CNN, AMC, NFL Network, NBA Network, A&E. Yeah, dude, these are real channels.
These are real channels, guys.
Oh, Fubo Cycling. That's a seller. The Fight Network is on here. That's good.
There you go. What about your rugby?
Nope, because that's on, what's that on?
You can't watch rugby in America.
Yes, you can. Yeah, you can. Plus.
That's what it is, plus. Because ESPN 3 has the Aussie football, which is better than rugby. Come at me, bros.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, Prime Video has 4 seasons of Twilight Zone, but Hulu has 5.
But Hulu does not have all the episodes in their seasons.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's episodes that they don't have in there. Yep.
I would stick with Amazon. No commercials.
Dude, if you want to watch Twilight Zone, you just get CBS All Access.
Oh, I do. Okay, great.
Yeah, that's got all the episodes in it.
All the old ones?
Yeah, the old ones.
Great.
And you can watch the new show.
And Picard. And sure. Let's Make a Deal.
Whatever that is.
And Drew Carey's... Price is Right.
Is he still doing that? Jesus Christ.
Of course he is. It's a cash cow, dude. Why wouldn't you?
Jesus Christ. The Price is Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As well as 48 Hours Mysteries.
I don't even know what you're saying right now.
Come on.
48 Hour Mysteries?
It's true crime drama.
No, I won't tell my wife about that then.
You tell your wife about that.
She got tired of Schitt's Creek, so she's watching Breaking Bad again.
Smart. Very smart. I was talking with my godchild, who's a freshman in college, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, did you ever see American Monsters?
Mm.
Oh, yeah, we've watched that.
Okay, well, then I need you to... Once I throw this out, then because I did look this up, I want to hear about this. But he's like, did you ever see this? And then he starts describing, well, it's like there's capers, like there's robberies and stuff. And I'm like, wait, is this a documentary? Is this real life?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, because I'm a sucker for capers and crime. So, And he's like, and what did I just say 2 minutes ago? He's a freshman in college. And he goes, yeah, it's a documentary. And I'm like, fantastic. And I'm like, Hulu, here I come. Hulu, search American Monster. Oh, there it is. Okay, it's on TBS, TNT, something. And I'm like, all right, play. And I'm looking at the screenshot, and I'm like, this looks like Sons of Anarchy. This does not look like real life. What the H? So I hit play just to be like, I don't know what this kid's talking about. This is not a documentary. And Hulu popped up the, you are not subscribed to this. And I'm like, eh, I'm not really. If it was a documentary, I'd be pissed. But knowing that that's just a drama, I was like, I don't think I'm missing much. Okay, on to the next show. So is it like Sons of Anarchy? Because I saw Ellen Barkin. I'm like, ooh, Ellen Barkin, hello.
Oh, no, Ellen Barkin, you're thinking of a different show. There is a show that's true crime called American Monster.
Yes.
And it's the same thing. It's just true crime. But the Ellen, I want to say that show is just called Plain Old Monster.
Oh, no, Animal Kingdom.
That is not the same thing, Nick.
Sorry, my bad. But no, it's Animal Kingdom he was talking about. And he's like, it was a documentary. And then all of a sudden, the Hulu image, preview image, had Ellen Barkin in it. And I'm like, there's no way this is a documentary.
Unless she's the host.
No. I'm telling you right now, when you go, just image search anything, like every image I saw of it, it looked like a Sons of Anarchy ripoff.
Yeah, like, that, I think that's probably true.
Yeah,
but I thought you were talking about American Monster. But where I thought you were going with it was we're really adverse to any of these true crime shows where the reenactments actually have speaking roles. Like, oh, they could go through the motions in some sort of blurry, slow motion fashion, and maybe, you know, they can reenact the scene as the police arrive and start taking pictures, or, you know, what did they find when they got there and stuff. But if you start talking, we're just like, oh God.
I just hate, like, the flashback scenes of, like, dudes with bad hair, fake mustaches, in like a wife beater, and then all of a sudden you see the talking head of like the police chief. And then Jason threw a punch at his wife, and 30 minutes later we were called, and when we showed up, his fists were all bloody. Like, oh God. Like, it's, for me, reenactments normally immediately take me right out of it.
The wife will totally latch on to how good the casting is relative to the real people who are talking. And she'll just be like, oh my God, the casting for this is way off. But then there are other shows where they'll do a really good job of the casting, to the point where then she's complaining because she can't tell if it's a reenactment or real video footage.
Oh, wow.
That's so good.
Because sometimes they'll even do a thing where if it was like if the crime occurred in like the early 90s, then they'll have like they'll put some kind of like crappy VHS effect over it. Right. And the best is when they'll do that and try and make it look low resolution, but it's still like widescreen HD dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like letterbox it off the sides. I'm not convinced. You haven't fooled me.
I've also seen the ones that have actor reenactments, and they're going through the motions. Then you have the real life person that's, you know, that crime was 15 years ago. And all of a sudden that guy looks exactly like the actor, except that guy has tattoos. And it's like, wait a minute, who am I in the past? Am I in the present? What's going on here? And it just is so confusing. It's like, wait, now he's talking to the camera. Wait, there he has short hair. What the hell's going on here? So good. But one question I wanted to bring up to you, because I threw out, because we have a best of 2019 coming up, and I was going through my documentaries, and I chose one, and it was a documentary from Nick Broomfeld. And I don't know if either of you have ever watched a Nick Broomfeld documentary, and it's interesting because I'm so I think at this point, I sort of like the Netflix way of doing documentaries that doesn't have reenactments usually. And they're sort of splicing together talking heads with like real article, news articles, video footage, you know, filmed footage with like articles, like explaining the scene, that type of thing, along with news camera, like newsreels, just to give you like text and context of the time and the place. So obviously I have to watch more recent documentaries to get that. You're not getting the same thing if they're talking like the 1940s, obviously.
I'm looking at his filmography. I see Whitney, but yep. Is that the big Whitney Houston documentary? Because I don't remember it being called Can I Be Me?
I believe it is the big one. But he's pretty well known for doing the Curt and Courtney. As well as Biggie and Tupac. And then the thing that, well, at least put him on the map for me was that Elaine, the movie that, God, I forget who the heck it was she portrayed. Darn it, I'm zoning out. But there was a movie made based on the film from Dick Broomfield. But for him, I don't know if you've seen any of his films, but he inserts himself.
You mean Monster?
Monster. Is that it? Monster?
Yeah. Charlize Theron?
There you go. Yeah. She plays her. But he, in his documentaries, he actually sort of inserts himself into his films, which is interesting. And I right now, though, the one that I'm watching right now, it's on Hulu, Tales of the Grim Sleeper. And it's about a serial killer who supposedly killed over 100 women in a 25-year span. But since it was South Central L.A., the cops didn't really care, you know, if these a lot of the women were like prostitutes or drug addicts. So they just sort of disappeared. But it's interesting because he inserts himself into the interviews. So it definitely feels like the director who did Roger and Me. It feels like
more.
Yeah, it feels like him. Like he's a personality in his movies. Nick Blumenfeld's does sort of a similar thing. And needless to say, like that watching this film made me think about Errol Morris. And I don't know if either of you have watched any Errol Morris. His big film that he won the Academy Award for was Thin Blue Line. But he also did Fog of War, and then he did The Unknown Known, which was Blumenfeld, documentary on Blumenfeld. Tabloid is on Netflix right now, and I think Fog of War is as well. But his films will have talking heads and will have like news articles, but he's a lot more stylized and he actually does reenactments with voiceovers, but he does them in such a way that it actually looks like a film instead of just sort of like a made for TV thing. He has a really cool slow style to how he films, how he puts together his documentaries. But I didn't know where you guys fall on that regarding documentaries.
Well, I am putting Fog of War in my queue because this sounds cool.
It is. It's really effing brilliant. If you walk away from watching any of his stuff, I would say that. Oh, we have talked about Errol Morris stuff. You watched a television series that he did.
Did I?
Yeah, he did Wormwood.
Oh, yeah.
About the projection.
Yeah.
The spy who was doing projections in the 60s.
Yep, 50s. Yep.
Yeah, that was him. That's his style. Like how slow pans he does and all the reenactments, except this was 100% reenactment, 100% a film instead of a documentary. Yeah, but that definitely is his style. And the Rumsfeld is, holy guacamole, that's frightening. But it's good. And I can appreciate all those different styles. It's just really, Broomfeld's really interesting because he does get, just like Michael Moore, he becomes part of it. And it's almost like I don't even know how to describe it. You feel like he's part of the film where it's almost like he gets in the way of the film because he's interjecting himself so much into it. It's a little, I don't know, it's strange. Like, his subject matters are fascinating, but it's really strange to have a filmmaker that a documentarian that far into their own films. Just strange. And it's all personal preference, of course. Just curious, but I'd highly recommend jumping in there.
Yeah, you know me. I don't. I barely remember my own name, so I don't follow like directors or writers or anything like that. And this happens all the time. Like I'll watch something and I like it. I'm like, oh, let me go see like who the cast is, right? Like get names. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's the director. Like, oh yeah. I wonder what else he did. And I look it up. I'm like, oh, I watched like 30 of his films. They're all fucking great.
Yeah, that's so bizarre. But cool. But I will say Errol Morris, if you pay attention to pretty much all of his soundtracks, they're all done by Philip Glass. And Philip Glass is just a hypnotizing composer, whether you're listening to one of his operas, Einstein on the Beach, or you're watching, there was some fast motion films that he put his scores to. He just has a really cool, minimal, but yet it's very repetitive. It almost put, for me, if I want to meditate, it puts you into like a dream state because it's very, very repetitive, the sound. You would like it. You'd really like it, Martin. It's really some interesting ways to approach his soundtracks. It's, yeah. And Errol Morris uses Philip Glass all the time.
Now that I got to see.
Like a formula for Gundy falling asleep on the couch.
And trust me, I've watched Thin Blue Line about 3 times because I think it's on Netflix now. And the 3rd time I did fall asleep. Because it's so relaxing. The music is so relaxing, but in a good way. I mean, he's really, really clever with his pacing.
I don't want to fall asleep while I'm watching a documentary, though.
I'm just saying, you might like his soundtracks, buddy.
All right, I'm going to check out the soundtracks. Let me put this on my notes.
Was that your 2019 documentary?
No, my 20.
Are we going there?
Oh, I like it. No, but I will.
It's been an hour and 13 minutes.
That's true. My 2019 best of 2019 documentary. Mine is At the Heart of Gold, Inside the USA Gymnastics Scandal. It's on HBO. It's an hour and 25 minutes, something like that. Hour and a half. You're in, you're out. If you have HBO, you should watch it. It is absolutely heartbreaking. It is so frightening how so many parents just give over their children to other strange adults and just like, okay, you can babysit them. Psh, there they go. Because it's for their best interest.
Yeah.
And it's all about they break it down. Like they go in so inside that they show like the Olympic Training Center that I think was down in Texas at the time. And this doctor would bring the gymnasts. And I mean, they're US gymnasts. How old are they? 12. He would bring them in and take care of their injuries and then do relaxation techniques and massage techniques that all of a sudden this 12-year-old had no clue what that was because they don't have, you know, their life is wrapped up into one thing, gymnastics. They don't understand pretty much the rest of the world. But then to see these women in their mid-20s reliving all of this and talking about their individual stories, because it's all individual stories. It's not like 2020 where it's like, here's 30 victims all sitting together. Let me talk to everyone at once. No, it's you get their individual stories, and then that's where you learn about, and I mean, this is like a sociopath. You learn how he did the same thing to not just one person. Like, he refined his predatory instincts and fine-tuned them more and more.
Yeah, my wife and I watched it. We thought it was good.
It is really, really good. And so fascinating, like a lot, like you follow, you might read about it or hear about it, but there's so much insight in that film. So if you have HBO, highly recommend.
I have HBO for Watchmen.
I'll add that to the list.
You should. It's It is an eye-opening, and it's not exploitive whatsoever. It's just fascinating. Like, even their training facility, they show, like, a schematic, and then they show where his office is and how he would manipulate, like, so he can get an office that's away from everybody so he won't be interrupted, and just disgusting. Absolutely disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Right behind the locker room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's good. Gundy, what's your documentary?
I feel like I'm going to, if I go next, there's going to be a theme getting thrown down. But I feel like I, for whatever reason, like I watched so many documentaries in 2019 that it was like, it was the year of the broken person with unlimited resources who just damages people. It leaves damaged people in their wakes.
Well,
so
go for it. Cause mine is completely the opposite.
Good, good. Well, you'll be the after dinner mint.
I don't know about that.
For as many as we watched the R. Kelly one, and I would chalk up the Whitney Houston one to that same sort of like category. But we watched Leaving Neverland, and if you don't know, and I'm sure you do, it's about the victims of Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
But what really struck me was. Not that he was doing this stuff. Like, I don't feel like that's like news anymore. And to the degree that he was doing stuff. Yeah. Like they're throwing out the details about it and stuff. And it's, you know, fascinating and horrifying and all of that. But listening to these two guys talk about it in a way that isn't so much I'm damaged for life or, you know, this is how this ruined my life. There's the moment for both of them where it's basically Michael Jackson broke my heart.
Mm.
And it just tears you up to hear that, you know, to their, partially formed minds, the kind of damage that this can cause, but also just like, they're frozen in that. Like that is a snapshot that comes back to them anytime they will it up. Like that feeling of being, you know, passed on for the next boy toy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like it's just horrible, but a stellar documentary.
Yeah.
We've got that on our, to watch list. We're not going to watch the R. Kelly one. My wife started and she's like, nope, can't watch this.
Because it's too graphic?
Lars von Trier is her favorite director. You think she cares about graphic?
Then why?
I don't know. It just, I guess to her, it seemed extra disgusting.
We were actually talking about this over the weekend and how it influences how you feel about the art and, you know, the classic separating of the art from the artist and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not that that's where you were going with it, but like, you know, maybe she really likes his music, but also just like my wife is on the war path for any radio station that'll play any Michael Jackson music. Just like, how are you still doing this? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
She likes Space Jam too much. I believe I can fly.
Space Jam. Wasn't there a sequel or like a remake?
It's coming out in a couple of years starring LeBron James.
That's right. LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, can I give two runners up?
You sure?
This one is from, as well, HBO. And I don't know if you watched this, Martin. I'm sort of curious if you did. The Maradona documentary.
Oh, yeah. I watched it.
Dude, if this is completely different than Gundy and I's choices. Like I said, this is a runner-up. But the best way I can describe him, and feel free to correct me, and if you have any history, feel free to add it.
I will.
But imagine Michael Jordan being open at the time of his apex, being open to having any and all cameras around him at every minute of the day, filming whatever. That is exactly what Maradona was doing. He was the Michael Jordan of soccer.
I would go beyond that.
I would even say he is. Well, that's just to contextualize. Unless you know soccer, if you know soccer, then he was the biggest star in the world,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
But just the amount of like drugs this guy was doing, mm-hmm, hanging out with so many. There were so many like scenes of him dancing with all of these different women, and then being at the apex of his popularity, going, obviously the small town purchases his contract. He goes there, wins cups for this small, small Italian town. And then all of a sudden he's like, all right, well, I got to move on to a bigger spotlight. And then the entire small town turning on him, where they were turning a blind eye to all the drugs, all of the, you know, everything he was doing, all these bad habits. And he even admitted he had like drug problems. He had sports enhancement problems, and everyone turned their blind eye. He wouldn't have to do piss chests. But as soon as he was like, yeah, I'm not going to renew my contract, then all of a sudden, all of his bad habits, now all of a sudden he has a 24-hour spotlight on him, asking him about all of these habits that everyone knew about. But now since he's leaving, now all of a sudden the public spotlight completely did a 180.
Mm-hmm.
It was so good. Oh my gosh. And I didn't know anything about the guy. I have no clue when it comes to soccer.
So I'm very familiar with the guy because we lived in Argentina for 6 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're in Argentina and you say his name, like, it's like you're talking about Jesus, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
it was that, like, in this small Italian village, they were painting effigies, or not effigies, they were painting murals of him right next to, like, baby Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, even though we have, like, superstar players in the NBA and NFL and all that, trust and believe that there is nothing like a soccer superstar.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Because, like, regardless of how fanatical you might be of a sports team, like, soccer fans are on a whole different level.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, if you've ever visited your wife's family in the old country, Nick. But, like, if you go to the UK, for example, like, it's fucking insane. And it's the same thing in Latin America, and that's how it was with him. I remember my dad didn't like the guy because of the antics, right? My dad liked him as a player, but when the whole drug thing and the partying thing coming out all the time, my dad's like, I'm kind of done with this guy. Yeah, that guy's interesting, man. If, it's like a superstar, like pre social media and pre reality TV, but like he's doing all that shit.
Yeah. But still, even cameras weren't readily available back in those times.
Right.
And my God, the amount of film that they have on this guy. Mm-hmm. Woo! Holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and my other honorable mention, on Hulu, if you're a fan of Back to the Future, you're familiar with it, and it's called Framing John DeLorean.
Mm.
And it is all about John DeLorean, and John DeLorean was a cuckoo. But a smart cuckoo, so I would highly recommend.
Mm, very good.
What about you, Martin?
So since you gave a runner-up, I will give a runner-up, which I'm sure some people think is going to be my documentary of the year. It's not. Memory of the Origin of Alien. Everyone needs to see that.
Is that even streaming? Or is that?
No, it's not streaming. I think you got to buy it. I bought it. I don't know.
Okay.
You can't stream it. So it's probably rent or buy. But it is fantastic. If you like Giger, or if you're a fan of the Alien franchise, it's fucking awesome. However, because you guys are being Debbie Downers with your documentaries, I wanted to choose an upbeat documentary that's not at all going to be divisive amongst the audience. My documentary of the year is Hail Satan!
Oh, that was very good.
Did you see it?
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. I've been following kind of the history of the Satanic Temple. Once I watched this, Because the people running it are like really freaking interesting. And before any like super hardcore Christians freak out, and there's a lot of that in this documentary, I recommend even those people watch this. Because I think you do get a really good sense of what these guys and girls are about. It's almost like performance art, right? Where, like, I don't know if these guys actually believe that Satan is a real thing. I'm pretty sure they don't, right? Like, the Church of Satan people don't, for sure. This is more like a social change movement, right? Except thinly veiled in this, like, satanic imagery because it's, like, countercultural.
That was my takeaway, was that, like, LaVeyan Satanism is actually worshiping Satan. But Satanic Temple, right, is they don't, I feel like there's no deity they worship. They're just, correct, like you said, it's a counterculture sort of movement.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, they veil it in these, like, satanic rituals and satanic imagery and whatever doctrine. But again, they don't mean any of that in that way, right? They're only reacting in that way because, for example, there's discussion about like abortion in Missouri, the Baphomet statue when they try to put the Ten Commandments, what was it, Arkansas or like someplace? I can't remember. They sued the state because they wanted religious freedom. And they're like, well, if the Christians can have this Ten Commandments statue at City Hall or wherever it was, some government building, then we should be allowed to practice what we believe in. And you should also have a statue of Baphomet at this government building. And so they veil it in this imagery because they know that it's going to piss people off, but they kind of take it as a joke. And I thought it was really interesting, and like all the people that they talk to and interview, like, seem like very interesting characters. You know what I mean? I think a lot of those people truly see this as kind of, you know, stick it to the man kind of thing. And I thought it was really well done, really, really well done.
One question and one comment. My comment. I would much rather like to go to San Francisco and go to the Church of John Coltrane if we're going to talk about alt religion.
Uh-huh, sure.
St. John Coltrane African Orthodox Church, San Francisco. Look it up. There's even a documentary on it. Hell yeah. Love Supreme. I'll take it. African Brass. You know where I'm at. Question, is this Hail Satan documentary, where is this streaming?
Is it on Prime? Netflix. Yeah, Netflix, right? Okay. I don't know. Let's see what Just Watch says.
Because that does sound interesting.
It's really good.
Hail Satan with... Oh, it's Hulu.
There you go.
Cool.
And it's Hail Satan with a question mark.
Yes.
I kept comparing it to the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster and Pastafarianism.
Yes.
I felt like that's more of the direction they were trying to take it than like you said, the worship of Satan. Sorry, I didn't mean to interject.
No, let me explain for anyone listening that has no idea what Pastafarian is. It started out on 4chan, right? Like as a joke thing. I'm pretty sure it's a 4chan thing.
That might be how that that guy's letter to the school got around.
Yes,
but he wrote a letter to his child's school about teaching creationism.
Mm-hmm. And so this whole thing came about the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, where these people, quote unquote, worship this omnipotent bowl of spaghetti.
Spaghetti is pretty good.
Spaghetti's great.
Man, ask Daryl Taylor. He'll tell
you. He's probably Uber eating some right now.
Hell yeah.
Yes, it's very much like the Pastafarians. It's really good. I highly recommend it. And the cool thing about it is it makes you think, you know what I mean? Like, why do people believe in certain things and others don't? And why is there any difference?
And why can't I have that tax break, damn it?
Well, that too.
All right, people.
You still had a comment, I think, Nick.
Oh, no, my comment was about the I'm going to the Church of John Coltrane.
Oh, sorry.
That was the comment. All right, gentlemen, your favorite film of 2019?
Gundy, you want to go first on this one?
Sure.
Okay.
Unless you're going to be downers because mine is an upper.
No, mine is awesome. Go for it.
Jojo Rabbit.
Really?
Oh, nice.
Really, you're surprised, or really, you haven't seen it and you've been looking for a recommendation?
The latter.
Yeah. Amazing movie.
No kidding.
It's very easy to compare the poking fun of Nazis to like the producers.
Mm-hmm.
If you can laugh at that sort of thing, that's all this movie is. Until and to the point where like you're so distracted by how funny it is that when it gets real, it just socks you in the gut.
Huh.
Such a great movie though.
That's all right, great. Let me find this now because I'm gonna watch it tonight. I've been looking forward to recommendations, and I don't hear anyone talking about it. So,
oh man! So basically, the kid in the movie is a member of the Nazi youth, and his imaginary friend is actually Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Hitler talks to him like a kid might imagine, you know, a grown up imaginary friend talking to him and stuff. So that in and of itself, like that dialogue. Is just hilarious. It turns out that his mother is actually hiding a Jewish girl in the walls of their home. So he's all gung-ho Hitler youth, and he discovers that this Jewish girl is hiding there. And so there's all sorts of like his ridiculous preconceptions about what a Jewish person must be because of how he's been, you know, brainwashed and stuff, and you know how they're demons and monsters and stuff, and you know he actually tries to, you know, have conversations along those lines, and there's just funny dispelling of all of that and stuff. But of course they get, because they're basically both kids, they get to know each other and stuff, and then there's the warm fuzzies.
Yeah, this sounds great. Okay, cool.
No,
it's still in theaters.
Is it?
Yep.
Because honestly, yeah. I would see it a second time in the theater.
I think it's going to get Oscar buzz, so they're trying to keep it in the theaters.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's strange. That's a strange movie because their first teaser trailer had nothing to do with a kid's imaginary friend being Adolf Hitler. And then the second trailer made me do a 180, and the first trailer looked funny, but as soon as you found out that that's what it is, then that's from that point forward, I was dying to see that film.
And from what I understand, I'm going to butcher his name. I'm sure I never say it right, but Taika Waititi.
Yep.
He is a novel that he had been dying to adapt for years, and this was him just finally getting around to being able to do that.
So it is also a book. All right, let me put that on my list of things to do.
Nice.
Cool. Very good. I want to see that now. Hell yeah. All right, cool. Mine is also an upbeat, and as you guys know, I'm a huge horror fan. You're thinking, how can you have an upbeat horror film? I do. This movie came out, I think, early in the year. It's called One Cut of the Dead. So, yes, it's a zombie movie. It is a Japanese zombie movie. Because I think the Japanese make some of the most interesting horror and zombie movies of the past 10 years. So whenever a new one comes out, I always put it on my queue. And they had mentioned this as when this comes out, you got to watch it kind of thing on IO9. And I don't read the article, but I said, oh, zombie, I'm in. So I eagerly anticipated it. And you can watch it on Shudder. So if you have that, it's on there.
Just canceled it.
Did you?
Yeah, we only got it for the trial to be able to watch Tigers Are Not Afraid.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
That's very good. But yeah, I canceled it before I got charged.
Well, you should resubscribe because it's $2.49 a month for the first 3 months. And there's a lot of content in there. Why would you cancel something that's $2.49?
The wife doesn't like a lot of horror.
Well, shame on her.
I mean, not to the level of Julie the cruise director. But...
So Nick's already like, oh, horror movie with zombies, I'm out. I think you will love this, Nick.
I might have to check this out.
I think you will love this. So I came into this not knowing anything about it. And it kicks off as a zombie flick, right? A zombie's attacking this girl. And the whole time the scene is happening, I'm like, that girl is a terrible actress. So immediately I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be like a D-list like zombie flick, right? Like made on like a $2,000 budget. Mm-hmm. I was like, I love these kind of movies. I'm going to keep on watching. So I keep watching it. And then you find out that they're filming a zombie movie. Okay. And that's why this girl is acting so poorly. So he's like trying to give her pointers on how to be a better actress and, like this, that, and the other. Then you hear like these sounds outside the room, the building that they're in. They're in an abandoned building and they start talking about this like ritual. There's like an urban legend about this place where like the dead come to life or whatever. And you start seeing zombies and they come in and attack and, things get really crazy. Like the people turn against each other. And, like, it ends pretty gruesomely, and the camera, like, pans up into the air, and you see the girl that was at the beginning of that first scene. She's just, like, covered in blood, because she's just killed a bunch of people, like, zombies and people. And she's, like, standing in a pentagram on top of this building. And I'm like,
this was a happy-go-lucky film.
I'm getting there, because this is when the movie gets good.
Wait, do they break into a musical number? Because then I'm so in.
Almost. They break into one of your favorite things, and that's behind the scenes.
Ooh.
Because the film that you watch at the beginning is about 30 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the second part of this movie. The whole thing is like about an hour and a half. The second hour of this movie, okay, after you watch the 30-minute film, the zombie film, is how this movie was made. Because as it turns out, this Japanese company wants to launch like a zombie TV network, and they have this great idea to do a single camera, one cut zombie movie, streamed live as they're recording it, as they're filming it, like on premiere day for Zombie Channel TV.
Okay? Wow.
So then you start understanding like why that short film was filmed the way it was. But then you also start learning, like, why some things don't make sense. Okay? So, like, they get a crew together and they're doing rehearsals. And, like, you get some of the lines in the movie and you're like, I don't remember this line in the film. And then, like, they start filming the film and, like, just everything goes wrong. Right? But it's a one-camera, single-take movie being streamed live. So they can't change anything on the fly. They need to improvise. So a lot of the lines in the original script get scrapped. Like one of the guys that's supposed to play the director of the movie, in the movie that they're filming, is a severe alcoholic. And he ends up getting so drunk that the actual film director has to step into the role of the director of the movie within the movie. And they turn that other guy into one of the zombies. So then you learn like why the director's not in some scenes, like why lines get cut, why some people that were in rehearsing for the movie are not in the final movie. It's really well done. It's really well done. So that whole hour, the final hour of the movie is you're watching them make the movie. So you're rewatching what you just watched, but with the behind the scenes stuff at the same time. Because that's all part of the narrative. It's really well done. If you can get past the extremely bad zombie movie at the beginning, then you get that whole thing at the end. And then that first 30 minutes, you're like, okay, this is fucking genius.
Wow. Quick question for both of you. Have either of you seen Parasite?
Yes.
That's funny. The Just Watch says, if you like one cut of the dead, you'll love Parasite. And also, yes. Midsommar.
Oh, I still got to see that.
That was very good.
Was it? All right. I got to watch that.
Yeah, because Parasite's getting crazy reviews, and then it won a Palme d'Or at Cannes.
That's
and
not even I was new.
Like, wait, this is like a mystery, like thriller. I'm like, what the heck's going on here?
Oh, there's a new. Okay, I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, this is a South Korean.
This is a new one. Oh, see, now if it's South Korean, it's going to be good. Because let me tell you, they also make great horror films.
They do. They make great action films.
Yep.
From what I read, it's kind of they try to bust the genre up a little bit.
That's good.
That sounds interesting.
This one turns it on its ear, boys.
Mm-mm-mm. Parasite, is that on? It's not even on streaming yet.
No, yeah, it's still out.
Yeah, January 14th, 2020. You can watch this online.
Then you can finally watch it.
God, I want to see this now.
Sorry.
But yes, One Cut for the Dead. Awesome.
Yeah, that does sound good.
Nikki, what's your movie of the year?
Oh, sorry. My film should be Spider-Man Far From Home.
Mm.
Should it be Avengers? No.
No.
But what it is? I'm going to have to... I have a runner-up yet again, and that's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm.
But the film that I can watch consistently all the time is Shazam.
Really? Oh, man, that was 2019, wasn't it?
It was. It was early in the year.
That's my 16-year-old's favorite.
Ah, see, she has good taste.
Mm-hmm.
A film that, believe me, I can watch on the small screen and enjoy it just like I could the large screen. But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that's a big screen affair.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So Shazam is on HBO right now.
Oh, then you see it. Plenty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to be tucked into that film.
It's really good.
It's the entire cast. The only weak part is Mark Strong. Mark Strong?
Yep, Mark Strong.
He's the weakest part of it, and he's the villain. But Mark Strong, anything with Mark Strong's pretty good usually. What? And I mean, granted, hey, is the Joker a better film? Yes, a better superhero film? Debatable.
Why are you not sold on Shazam, Gundy?
I don't have any affection for the character. Mm. It's definitely not part of my comic book upbringing and stuff. But it looks like they wanted to make a superhero movie, but they also wanted to make a comedy, so they picked. The studio execs just kind of picked an untouched property that they're like, well, this could, we need a Deadpool. How about we just do a comedy with Shazam? That's how I interpret the trailer.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Well, you're wrong, but that's fine.
That is fine.
You should check it out. If you have HBO, check it out.
Neither of you are twisting my arm in any direction.
Hey, teach your own, buddy.
No, you literally haven't told me any reason to go see this movie.
I am completely sold on the main character. I like all the kids in it. I like the premise. The special effects are fantastic. I can watch, oh God, I even forget his name now. The lead, Shazam dude.
Whatever his name is.
Is it Ed?
Ed Bott.
Sure. But I can watch, I think Zachary Levi. I think he's really, really funny. He is a movie star for sure. And trust me, this is going up against Spider-Man, which that's my guy right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I would watch Shazam because the comedy really works in it.
Yeah, and I'm not going to try to sell you on it because I feel like out of all the DC movies, this one has the most appeal to like a comic book fan. Mm-hmm. And in particular to a Shazam fan, I think they did an amazing job at translating the comic into film. But if you're not a fan of the comic, then I'm not going to recommend you watch this.
No, you certainly don't need to watch that.
But it is funny, and it's got some great scenes. It's got a lot of heart. And I love, like, the last 20 minutes of it.
But, like, if you were to sell me on it, because it's just a damned good comic book movie, that could be enough.
I have only read a handful of Shazam, and it explained the history well enough to me. I thought the pitch and the tone was pretty spot on. I don't know. I think the comedy just worked, unlike the last few Marvel films, which I got pretty sick of that delivery of comedy.
Here's what I would recommend. Here's what I would recommend. Go to your library and find Shazam by Jeff Johns,
mm-hmm.
and start reading it. And if you like that book, then you will really like this movie.
All right.
What and it's Gary Frank arts, and you can't beat Gary Frank. Yep. So,
what I was going to ask is, will I appreciate it because I'm a Miracle Man fan?
No, but if they make a Miracle movie, a Miracle Man movie, then I will be there with you, buddy.
That's also a comedy.
No, that cannot be a comedy.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so.
But like but I no, said, I had, if you like had, Jeff Johns, then read that.
For me, it's all about rewatching. If it was just going by, you saw it once, which one really impacted me, it would be between Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and the documentary Apollo 11. So, But am I rushing to watch either of those a second time? No. I've seen enough Quentin Tarantino feet, so I don't need to see that again.
Wait, he has his own feet in his movie?
No, he is fascinated with feet. So he has, throughout Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I think it's like four or five separate scenes that in the forefront of his image is a woman's feet as the character is talking. And it looks like it's almost way in the background, but the feet are still attached to that actor that's talking. But the feet are so close to your face.
That's how the Uma Thurman one was.
Yep. You can
Kill Bill.
Once you realize his foot fetish, you can see it throughout almost all of his films, from Pulp Fiction on.
Yep.
Reservoir Dogs, not included.
Not included.
Ooh, look at this. So I was on Comixology to see if Jeff Johns' run was on Unlimited, and they actually have a movie. It's not, it doesn't seem to be like a tie-in. It's kind of like a collection that is what the movie is based on.
Oh, that's awesome.
Does it have Zachary Levi on the cover?
It does. Blowing a bubble. Adorable.
Yeah, I think that is the Jeff Johns limited series.
Let's see. Yep. Partially.
Yeah, it's like 160 pages or something.
7 through 11, 14 through 16, 18 through 20.
Ooh, no, photo cover. No, this is not it.
Oh.
No, this is the Justice League stuff.
Fantastic.
With Shazam. Which is not bad if you watch, what was that movie called, Nick? The animated Justice League.
Justice League Unlimited?
No, the movie.
That retro sort of one?
Justice League. There was one where they team up with Aquaman to defeat Ocean Master. There's a couple of those. Shazam is a big part of that. All those movies. Anyways, regardless. That's the source material for those. Why Zachary Levi is on here? I don't know. Maybe because they were recollecting this? I don't know. The one that you need to find, which also... No, it's not an Unlimited. Damn. All right, never mind. I thought it was. Now, this is the current series.
I don't know
series.
If you know, but it looks like he's sending a text message.
Yes.
Yep.
All right, here we go. This is it. Is this it? Yes, this is it. It's on Unlimited. It's Shazam Volume 1. It's got Shazam busting through a wall like the Kool-Aid Man.
Not the one where he's sitting at a desk in a classroom?
Nope. Oh, and see, this one also has the stories that are in the one that you just mentioned. Interesting.
Weird.
Interesting. You know what? It's Unlimited. Just read that. Read the one you mentioned.
I will.
No cost for entry.
Yeah, there you go.
No, that's how I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to read this. I forgot I had this.
That's the side of my bread that's buttered.
Ooh.
You got to butter both sides, buddy. Gotta butter both sides. Were we supposed to pick a favorite TV show? I was just looking over your message. I didn't see that.
No, I didn't. I didn't throw that on the list, but feel free. But I will put an asterisk next to that because I don't watch television.
Good call.
But go ahead. And I already know you're going to say Watchmen. But
yeah, please. There you go. Bingo. Where's my bell? Yeah, it's Watchmen. Watchmen, the best TV show of 2019. Go watch it. It's on HBO. It's 9 episodes. It just finished.
I think you're being facetious.
Dude, it's so fucking good. I'm being 100% serious.
I thought you hated it. I thought I saw tweets that you were slamming it.
When I first started, I was like, not so sure about this. But after like episode 3, I'm like, this is fucking great.
Yes.
And the last few episodes, I'm like, holy crap.
He's talked on this podcast 3 separate times. almost every week he would talk of the very next episode. You have to watch it. I'm like, I'm waiting till the end of the season.
Right, oh, season's no. over. Just, go watch it.
I will.
So I started episode 9, the final episode, today. And I got halfway through and I was like, I got to take a break.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
In a good way.
It's really good.
Do you both listen to the podcast?
There's a podcast?
Yeah, there's a podcast with, I want to say it's the guy who used to do the Lost podcast. And it came out for like, I think every other episode they would do an accompanying podcast. And Lindelof was on it.
Oh.
Just saying.
The official Watchmen podcast.
It's supposed to be pretty in-depth. But Lindelof, I guess, was on 1 or 2 episodes talking pretty in-depth about it and how he's even debating on doing season 2.
Martin, did your wife watch it with you?
No.
Mine did.
Oh.
Having no history or never having read anything. And she was just blown away.
No shit.
And I did enough pausing to just kind of like give a little background here and there and stuff with it. And I was really careful not to give her too much information in case it came up later or whatever. Mm-hmm. But based on just feeding her little tidbits and stuff, she ate it up. She was just blown away.
No kidding.
And she liked leftovers too.
All right. I'm going to put this on my Spotify list to listen. Because that's good. It's 3 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that show is so good, man. The stuff that they did with Dr. Manhattan and Ozymandias is freaking genius.
Yes. Do not spoil anything, either of you.
I'm not.
Okay, because I do want to watch it. And I would love it if Julie the Cruise director joined, but I can guarantee you it's going to be... The phone will not be put down enough for her to pay attention to. So it'd be worthless.
So my problem is going to be that my wife hates superhero stuff.
Mm, mm.
And the first few episodes are kind of superhero-y.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Where okay, Gundy, did you watch The Boys and did you watch that with your wife?
She seemed like she was up for it, but I never pushed her enough to... And I haven't. Well, in case you don't know this, I don't watch television unless it's with the wife. I just don't have the attention span to watch stuff by myself. So if I'm watching anything on the telly, it's 100% with the wife. But like I said, she seemed like she was on board, but I don't know. And I know the reviews and the recommendations have been really high, but just based on having read the comic, it wasn't enough for me to prioritize it.
Did you like the comic? All right, if you were hot and cold with the comic, you will love this show.
That's what I know. That's what everybody says.
Yeah,
it may have been that I was just so distracted by how much that guy Wee Huey looks like Simon Pegg, and I just could not get past that.
Gotcha. Yeah,
I love some Garth Ennis.
I was not like hugely thrilled with the comic. It was good. But it's not like, oh my God, everyone should read this.
Mm-hmm.
But the show is freaking awesome.
Yeah, I couldn't even get through the series, but the show is freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I will make it a priority. We've got we seem to be running into some lulls and scrambling to watch stuff lately.
Well, you better hurry up because I'm sure like 2 weeks into January, then everything will come back. So it's like, oh no, there goes my free time.
Mm-hmm. I guess that means we need to pick our favorite comic of 2019.
Mm.
And I'm going to kick things off very lighthearted once again.
Oh.
Just kidding. My book is Fearscape from Vault Comics.
Fearscape?
Fearscape.
Oh.
Fearscape. As you guys know, I love walking around the streets in my top hat and my ascot with my pinkies up. And I know that you guys are also pinkies up readers. So you guys will love this book. Guaranteed.
Again, creative team?
The creative team, written by Ryan Sullivan. The artist is Andrea Muti. And who's the cover artist? Ariella Cristantina. The whole package is freaking awesome. The basic gist of this whole story is that there is another world, another realm, the Fearscape, where all of humanity's like mythologies basically are real, and there's trouble in this Fearscape, and so one of the muses comes to Earth to find this author and take him to the Fearscape to like combat humanity's fears and save the Fearscape. excuse me. She has previously visited him. In fact, he's like a George R. R. Martin kind of guy. Well, let me not say that because he quit writing. He's like a Tolkien kind of guy. Okay. He does like hardcore fantasy and like he's super popular. There's like TV shows made of his stuff. But you know, he's old now. He's in his 80s and he's dying. Okay. He's really sick. And all the books that he's written are based on like his actual adventures in the Fearscape, from when he was there the first time. And, that's why like they're so good, cause it's basically just writing from memory. And so again, it's been many, many decades. So the muse comes back to take him back there and help her and save the realm. Except now he's an old man and she kind of doesn't realize that. And they also don't really, time doesn't work the same way. So she comes up to this guy who like is kind of an underling of this famous author. He's trying to learn how to write like this guy, like an apprentice kind of deal. And she thinks that that's him. That's the author. And he's like, yeah, that's me. That's totally me. And so he goes on this adventure and like the muse gets a little confused because he doesn't seem like the same kind of guy, but he said he was, so he must be. And this guy is like a total douchebag. Like talk about a main character that you will hate. That's this guy. There's a lot of like inner monologue throughout the book because he's like narrating the story to you. But he's got like a very grandiose sense of self. So he's over embellishing everything. But then you look at like what's actually happening in the panel and compare it to the narration and they don't match up. Right? Cause he's got this like inflated sense of ego. It's really, really fascinating, really well done. Reminds me a lot of, like the Cthulhu stuff, which you guys know, I love Lovecraft. So if you're into that kind of thing, highly, highly recommend it. This is like a work of prose that somebody just turned into a comic, I think.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, it's very good.
Go ahead, Gundy.
Don't think I have anything from Vault.
You should have every book from Vault on your list.
So I got turned on to a book from a Warren Ellis recommendation, and it's not from 2019, and I know that wasn't the criteria from Nick was specifically you discovered it in 2019. And I think I'm pronouncing it right. It's called Pakliss, P-A-K-L-I-S, ooh, by Dustin Weaver.
Oh, okay.
And the book is kind of like his, it's on Image, and it's just kind of him flexing his muscles on different stories that he's had in the back of his head for a long time. I don't have any background with him at all. And the reason that Warren Ellis was recommending him is because he just had a couple of like just gorgeous panels in his newsletter. And it's just kind of like, sometimes his book looks like this, and it's kind of like a landscape. And then sometimes it looks like this, and it was a cityscape where all the buildings are in their shapes of animals.
Cool.
It just looked so good. I'm like, okay, I'll look into this. If you've ever read Barry Windsor Smith's Storyteller, it's done in that style where he's serializing stories, but like three stories in one book.
Oh, it's an anthology. Count me in.
It's an anthology of his own stuff.
Hell yeah.
And I don't know, for me, I kind of want to just, I've read enough from like the first three issues that I'm like, okay, I'm probably going to want to just buy all, I think there's eight, just buy all eight and then just read straight through on the individual stories. Cause that's what I ended up doing with Storyteller. He does some really cool stuff in like, the inside front page where he's kind of breaking the fourth wall, just, you know, making fun of, comics being made and stuff, but using his own characters and everything. He's doing a lot of experimentation and stuff with his own, you know, just being one artist doing several different styles and stuff appropriate to whatever story he's trying to tell. Sometimes it's very manga like, sometimes it's Kafka-esque insect heavy psychological mini stories and stuff. It's a very cool book.
All right, so I looked it up. It is five issues.
Five
issues is what's on Comixology. And the pricing's weird. So issue one is 99 cents. Issue two is $2.99. Uh-huh. Issue three and four are 99 cents. Issue five is $2.99.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
But that's awesome. I just bought all of them.
Welcome to Nerdy Leap.
Where's the bell?
Yes, ring it. I came into... Dustin Weaver came into my scope. Of course, I'm the number one mark for Jonathan Hickman. And when Hickman fired up a retelling of the origin of S.H.I.E.L.D., Dustin Weaver was doing the art. And if you haven't read that miniseries, I think it's like 12 issues or something. Just to sort of put a little Hickman twist on it. And he also followed Hickman over during one of the Avenger titles, too. Weaver was on. But just to put a little Hickman twist, it's the Howard Stark goes back to Galileo and Da Vinci era, meets both of them to battle Galactus.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
That's the concept. And needless to say, if that's how he elevator pitched that to Marvel, it is exactly that. It was not a Walking Dead pitch where it was like, where's the aliens by issue six from Robert Kirkman. Oh no, Galileo's in it. Da Vinci's in it. And Weaver does some beautiful Da Vinci looking art.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, this book is like 6 or 7 years old, but the final issue just came out like a year ago.
It was, they also did a different series too. Series on it, but you're right, it's like it took 3 years for 12 issues to come out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but guess what, you don't have to worry about that because they all came out maybe a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all collected, so all the people that got pissed off that it never ever ended, I don't know. You know, when I read it, when it was collected, I didn't feel any of that pain.
Waiting around once a month like a chump.
Wednesday Warriors, go. Not me. Thank you. Okay. My pick. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Gundy.
I forget. When you said that he worked on a S.H.I.E.L.D. book, like I could really see his style with those characters or just, you know, like shield uniforms running around and like I'm hoping for like a retro Nick Fury kind of thing with that. That sounds great.
It is. Mm. If they were based in the Renaissance, yes, you're right.
Maybe not then.
Go. My comic of 2019, my best. Since my spotlight character was Superman, I read various Superman tie-in titles as well as the main title. Fell in love with the character. Just amazing. Amazing journey for me. Will not sleep on Superman moving forward. Could the best title be any issue of Lois Lane? For sure. Because Lois Lane from the 60s effing rocks. Every issue is an acid trip. So good. So perfect. Sadly, they don't reissue a lot of those issues, so I'm not going to recommend that, sadly. But what I am going to recommend is not Red Hood. First time reading that, brilliant, better than Red Hood.
What?
Spider-Man, A Life Story by Chip Zdarsky and Mark Bagley.
Mm.
Telling the story of Spider-Man through the decades, and unlike a comic book, every decade, every issue is a decade, and every issue he ages the decade. So towards the last issue of the limited series, he is married, he has children, they might not have received some Spidey powers, and he's very old, but the entire universe, Spidey universe, ages with him. So even his villains get older. And Zdarsky, this was one of my first introductions to his writing. And every issue has a plot point, an event in Peter's life that was paramount to build the character. Is this a good jumping on point for new readers? Probably not. Because if you don't know Kraven's Last Hunt, issue 3 might not really make sense to you all that much. It will. Zdarsky's a great writer, but will it have that gut punch? Probably not. But I've never read, and I think this is like 7 issues, I've never read a title that actually, I feel like I was watching one of those TV shows that every episode you know you're going to cry at the end. And this thing, probably 50% of the issues had me peeling a tear for not a sad moment. It could be a joyous moment. I'm not sure. It was the range of emotions, but it's shocking that it could do that. And I was not reading it in trade. I was reading it month to month. And I don't know if it would hit as well in a trade, but it was shocking that by the time that 30 days rolled around, all my emotions have been reset. I'm ready to jump into this fresh. And by the end of the issue, it's like, ding, dang it, Zdarsky, you got me again. I'm peeling another tear. But it, as a lifelong Spider-Man fan, I don't think I could have ever asked for a retelling of Peter Parker's tentpole events better than this.
How is this only $3.39 in the Comixology store?
Because you're an unlimited member.
I get a 69% discount?
Well, it's probably on sale, plus you get a discount for being a Prime member.
That's crazy pants.
Because, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Marvel's having a pretty big sale. And if you're going to be checking out any Marvel products, I think there's a banner right now that if you spend $15, you get $5 off. So it's a good thing to jump into.
It's like I'm barely buying something on the Nerdy Legion podcast.
Like I said, I only knew Zdarsky. I mean, I heard because I usually trade weight. I've heard all of my buddies raving about Zdarsky on Daredevil, raving about him on all these other books. And I only knew him as the artist from Sex Criminals, and Sex Criminals never, ever lit my fire, never understood the popularity. Hey, if that's your thing, you enjoy it. But it just never rang true for me. But holy Christ, I don't want him to be drawing anything moving forward. It was his writing was so freaking crisp and concise, and he was writing one item within a decade, but yet everything was condensed down to that one event for that decade. It was so good. Like, Norman had me up in tears. There were just different characters in the way he approached them. They felt like you heard the voice that you hear in your head for Harry Osborn. It absolutely rang true, but then he put it into the decade that issue was in, as well as opened up more about that character than what you were reading with Stan Lee and Ditko. Really, really good.
Everything that you said to kind of describe the nostalgia about it's like everything that I liked about Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
It sounds like that love letter to the character and the history.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Ah, Spider-Verse.
Hmm. That was great. Also, the only Zdarsky that I have ever read is his newsletter.
You should read his Marvel 2-in-1.
That's a good newsletter. All right, we have one more.
Do we?
Yeah.
Oh, we do.
Podcast that you discovered in 2019.
That's tough.
Oh,
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah, that's why we asked.
Not tough for me because I don't.
What?
What?
All right, so you get to go first then.
That's just it. I literally do not listen to podcasts. I can't. Wow. I take that back. I'll be in the kitchen doing stuff, and I'll put on the NPR podcast of just 3 minutes of
the news flash
headline. Yeah, I just can't. I can't do anything else while I'm listening to stuff. So I, for whatever reason, I can't split my attention. And I'm so jealous of people who can like be at the drawing table and have a movie on and still get stuff done. I just can't. I can't do it.
Wow.
So like today I was in the car for a lot, so I listened to you guys.
Nice. Good choice.
That's a great choice for 2019.
Still didn't prepare me for Martin's opinion on Watchmen, but
let's just say that was your favorite podcast of 2019. Thank you.
There you go. Nerd Legion 2019. Bam.
Close the votes.
I tune in for all the baseball card talk.
Yes. I have a few, actually, Nick.
Oh, well, I want one as the winner. I don't want you to give me a litany list, but I need one to be at the top of that mountain.
So it's really tough to pick one. I will give you one.
Give me 25, but I want one that stands above the rest.
So this over the past like week, I think. Yeah, over the past week, I found a new podcast. It's called Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape.
Wow, that sounds so good.
basically, it's I think they're cousins. One guy is like really into researching like everything, and the other guy knows nothing about anything. And the guy that actually knows stuff runs the show. And then the cousin like asks questions every once in a while. They also have a lot of guests. And what I like about it is that they do a lot of wide ranging topics, but a lot of stuff that I really enjoy. So like they'll do an episode on like mushrooms, the origin of mushrooms, and like different psychedelics. They'll do an episode on like UFOs. And the next one they'll do like philosophy of ancient Greece. And then they'll do like I don't know if you guys know anything about like Younger Dryas impact theory. Like asteroid hits. Or like research on like geological structures around the world. Or like archaeological stuff, like about the pyramids, or like Neanderthals, Denisovans, that kind of stuff. It's very wide ranging, and they hit on a lot of topics that I'm very interested in. And I don't always agree with the opinions, but I like listening to it. And I like that they have a lot of guests, like actual researchers in all these fields. And they don't always agree with those people either. So it's cool. I really enjoy it. Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape.
It sounds like the best episodes of Joe Rogan.
Yes, correct.
Or filtered down to not 3.5 hours.
Correct. Most episodes are like an hour and a half, hour and a half.
Oh, that's good.
And it's really good and it's very informative. So yes, I guess if you enjoy the good stuff of Joe Rogan, then check out Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape.
I like it. Mind is a duo as well. Two comedians. They do two podcasts every week. One is Small Town Murder, and the other one is Crime and Sports. The one that I want to talk about is Crime and Sports because I am a sports fan. But they go into and they're pretty much like not just the crimes, but it'll be the biography of the athlete. And there's plenty of athletes that they talk about that I have no clue who they are, to the point where I'll even go on and do like an image search of the person. Like, do I even recognize this person? I have no idea. But both of the hosts are stand-up comedians, so of course they can approach it in a very funny angle. While giving you, it isn't just like reading a Wikipedia page, thank God. But they also, it's very well researched. And like the most recent episode that came out last week, it was on this huge skateboarder, Mark Gator Rogowski. And they go through all of his ups and downs with drugs, with sex, and just like just absolute craziness dealings with the law. And they always research enough to give you court documents to talk to. They'll read off what an eyewitness might say, or they might even read what the athlete did in their own words. And it's about an hour and a half, the episode. But this Gator Rogowski, just as a little like side note, and he was like effing up left and right. Like when you hear every other month, the guy's getting in like an automobile accident, or he's getting into like, oh, he got arrested for drugs, or it just left and right. Like you can see the spiral happening. Well, at the end of the episode, he has a woman over, and this is after like multiple, like years of horrible drug habit. Then he finds God and he starts thumping the Bible, and he invites this one woman back to his place, and for whatever paranoid reason, he excuses himself, goes out to the garage. She's looking at like all of his like trophies and pictures up on his wall, and while her back is turned, he smacks her over the head with a crowbar, and then takes her into his bedroom, ties her up, rapes her for a day and a half, kills her, throws her into a surfboard bag,
takes her
out to a desert and buries her there.
Huh.
And needless to say, no one could find her. Like this was a dead case. No one could find her. And then he has a revelation from God, confesses to a friend who leads this like Bible group that's out in front of 7-Eleven, thumping their Bibles and trying to convince all of these sinners, you know, to come over to Jesus, confesses to him. And this is just a guy. This is not a priest. So the guy went to the cops and was like, this guy just told me he buried this woman in the desert. And sure enough, they go and dig her up. And that's the only reason they caught him, because she was dead for 8-9 months.
Jeez.
And everything, I know, it was just like, oh my God. So every episode is a crazy soap opera like that. And when I first started the podcast Crime and Sports, I cherry picked the athletes I knew or the sports I enjoy. Now I just listen to it because it's like, I don't know soccer. I have no idea. But once you start, it's just like, oh my God, is there any uplift to any of these stories? Probably not. It's called Crime and Sports. It's not Rebirth. Crime, Rebirth in sports. No, but they're fascinating mini ordinaries.
Hmm.
But that's small town crimes, interesting though. Small town crimes just as interesting.
I was gonna say that surfboard bag sounds really familiar. Like that was a 2020 or something.
Or American Monster.
Maybe. I was amazed.
Like I've seen stuff. Some. But the ending stuff you were saying about the confessing to it and stuff, I don't recall any of that. But, yeah, you know, who gets put in a surfboard bag?
Mm-hmm.
It's so crazy. They had one on a boxer who was the world heavyweight champion. And, I mean, this was like a period of like 2 months because he lost it in his next fight. But this guy was so addicted to crack that him and his wife, he just gets the belt. Him and his wife go to, God, I want to say it was like Kansas City. And his wife was harping on him, and he just said, F this. He got onto a bus with his, like, the check from Don King in his pocket for, like, $450,000. And he went on a bus to St. Louis just to score crack.
Jeez.
And then he even lost the check from Don King. Like, it was just like, oh, my God, what the hell? Like, it's, you just want to scream, but then you hear stories like this, and like, I don't investigate sports or athletes enough to hear these type of outcomes, but I recognize like the boxer's name. And then all of a sudden it was like, I don't know where he went. Like he just left the scene. And then all of a sudden you hear this crime in sports episode, and it's like, oh, that's what he was doing for 5 years. Oh, like, okay, that makes sense now. But crazy, crazy.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I like Gundy's podcast pick.
That is the best one. By far.
No, it's all like, since I work from home, I just like the car ride time was podcast time and audiobooks and all that stuff. And I gotta be like maybe on an epic walk by myself with earbuds or something to be consuming that kind of media.
Yeah. I'm more, if I'm cooking, doing the dishes, hell, even, taking a shower, I'll throw it on for 15 minutes here and there with headphones on. But yeah, I do miss the hour plus car ride, to and from work.
No, you don't.
I miss that part of consuming it because now I have, oh my God, if I opened up my podcast app, it's like, oh, you have about 800 podcasts waiting for you.
See, I have podcasts in my ears all day long. On the drive to work, at work, I have one earbud in. On the way home, if I go like grocery shopping, like whatever. If I'm cooking, I always have a podcast on.
Nice.
Yep. Very good. Was that our last category?
That was. Now all we need is the wrap up.
The wrap up. Yeah. We can talk about all the stuff, all the money I spent on Steam this week. Next time.
Oh, that's a little sneaky peeky.
We can talk about my Daredevil purchases for 2020 next time.
Oh, dang it.
Gotta keep them coming back.
What a tease.
Gotta keep them coming back. I mean, what else is Gundy going to listen to? You know what I mean? He can't listen to this episode. He's in it.
I won't.
Yeah. No. You quickly learn not to do that. Actually, the one thing I will say I do every episode is, because sometimes Martin and I chitter chatter before really kicking off the episode, and I'm always like, I wonder where he started that. Let me hear this. And that goes on for about 2 minutes, and then bye-bye.
My mind works in mysterious ways.
Yes.
Yes. Anyways, so you've been listening to the Nerdy Legion podcast with Nick and Martin and Gundy. Yeah. I think this is our last episode of the year, because next episode is like January 2nd.
Yeah.
Wow.
Happy 2019.
Happy Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah, happy Festivus, happy Kwanzaa. What other holidays are here? If you celebrate solstice, that just passed. Happy solstice. I think that's all of them. And happy new year. Remember, this is not the final year of the decade. Don't be an asshole. Don't be that guy. There's one more year. And that's it. Find us on Twitter, at Nick Wetmore, at Geekvine, at Gunderstorm, at Nerd Legion. Thanks for listening. See you next year.
Cheers.